Morning, Hugo.
Morning, Stephen.
Right, you were on television last night, 10:35, on BBC One. This series is called Journey of a Lifetime. What type of feedback have you got?
A lot of people rang in or texted in last night. I was up answering texts to about 12:30. And thank God, there were, you know, people seem to like the programme. And I think one of the things I'm very proud of is Suzanne came across very well, my daughter. And it showed Stabanov lovely too as well. So that's the height of it. And everybody really knew about me anyway, you know, down through the years. But it seemed to work okay. And I got calls from Cork City and from Dublin and from Monaghan and all over the place. And, you know, it's wonderful how the people can listen to the BBC now right around the world there.
Obviously, I made the programme with you, but you get a different experience when you're sitting in the house actually watching it go out on the night of transmission.
Oh, you do, yeah.
And the it was the authenticity to you, Hugo. And I was watching Twitter and many, many people were admiring how open you were and were saying that it was very brave. You mentioned your daughter, Suzanne. On last night's programme, she spoke about how she felt about you since you quit the booth.
It feels like he's constantly has to make up for it all the time.
What do you mean?
He just feels everything he does is trying to make up for all the years with the drink, and he doesn't have to. I mean, he has made it up many a time, but everything still goes back to the drink. I still have to make it up to you. It's not how to make up anymore. It's made up long ago.
So you've forgiven him?
Oh, long ago. Long ago. Long ago. It's the best dad I could have asked for. What's it without the drink? That's it. It wouldn't change my life. That's it. Wouldn't change it.
What's it mean to you, your daughter saying that?
I'm just not able to speak at the moment. It gets through to you. But you know, they are the silent victims. They are the people who are. It's not people like myself who did take a drink. It's the people who were sitting at home and taking all the problems that came along with it, you know. And you never think of these things at the time. And a lot of people out there do the same thing. We never think about it. And, you know, I heard a young man in your programme there last week or so chatting about the relationship between him and his mum and drink too as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his mother, God bless her, she would never have thought about hurting him. She didn't go out deliberately to hurt him. It's just that these things happen when you're drinking. When you're drinking, you're not thinking. That's just the problem.
And you said to me, Hugo, when we were filming down in your home, you said that it was the first time that you and your daughter had really sat down and talked about the impact on her of your drinking.
I suppose it was you didn't want to speak about the unspeakable, you know, that kind of way. It wasn't a conversation. It never came up at times. So you just thought the longer you left it, it would go away. But it never goes away, you know. You can do what you like, but you always leave that wee hurt in the people's minds and hearts.
There was a little sentence in that film that really, really, many sentences struck me. One of them was when Suzanne, your daughter, told you that she was really proud of you.
Yeah.
And your immediate reaction was, "Are you?" So yeah. There was a father saying, "Are you?"
We never spoke like that before. And it was just, we are very close.
You were surprised that your daughter was proud of you?
Aye, because, well, I don't know if it was, I never heard those words before. You know, we're a very quiet family at the same time. She's as loud as I am, Suzanne, like, and her mother would be the quiet one in the family, you know. And there's not much to conversation like that in the home, you know. But it was a shock for me to hear it. And
it's lovely.
It was lovely. And the amount of people that, you know, I'm not trying to put myself up on the pedestal that you asked me to do the programme. I've done the programme and I hope nobody thinks any less of me for doing the programme. But what I feel like is, you know, if it helps anybody to look at themselves the way that I didn't look at myself, because I wasn't looking. I was just out there and enjoying life, and I live today and live for the moment, and let tomorrow worry about itself, you know. And that was the way my life was way back then. And
are you ashamed of it?
Yeah, I suppose in ways I am. I wouldn't be ashamed of everything I'd done. But
no, I don't mean everything you did. I mean the drinking. Or do you see it as an illness?
See, drinks like a friend. It comes into your life as a friend, and you get closer and closer, and you become a great friend. And then when you try to break the ties with that friend, that's when the trouble starts. And, you know, it's so hard to get away from it. Thank God and His Holy Mommy, I was able to get away from it. I just hope that other people get some kind of a benefit out of it. I see young people at times in the studio with me. I told you this before, and you know, you can see it when you're talking about the alcohol experience, that they're going through it as well.
You know, just literally as we speak now, Hugo, the viewing figures for last night's programme are coming through, and there was a huge audience watching you last night, an enormous audience your programme last night. Yeah, that will have been one of the most watched programmes of the week last night, which just shows you the interest there is in you as a personality in Northern Ireland.
How about you too?
Here's Meg in Portadown wants to speak. Morning, Meg.
Good morning.
You can say hello to Hugo.
Hello, Hugo.
Yes, Meg, how you doing?
It's lovely. I never watched a programme as lovely. It was really, I really admire you. So I do, for coming out with, you know, your past. But your mother was a lady. She brought up such a lovely son.
And what did you like about the programme, Meg?
I think it was a truthfulness, you know. It was a different Hugo I saw, you know, from the one that's out in the media.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, it's a different... Well, he was human. Put it like that. Human. You know, rather than the personality side of it, you know. I thought he was...
Meg, thank you. It must be a scary thing to do. To open yourself up like that.
It was, but, you know, I've done it a few times. I did the book, and I did another thing before, but, you know, you brought more out. You got in there and you didn't leave any stone unturned, and you said what you had to say. And that's what I say. I know what the politicians come into, you know, go through, because, you know, Stephen doesn't, you know, he doesn't shadow box. He just hits you one right on the chin.
Some of the politicians were tweeting about you last night. Geoffrey Donaldson from the DUP.
I hear this, aye.
He was tweeting about you. Michelle Gildernew was tweeting about you too. Adrian in Derry. Morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning, Hugo.
Adrian, how you doing?
I want to tell you that your programme moved me to tears, because if only one thing can come out of that last night, if only one drinker was to reflect on the ramifications of their drinking lifestyle on their children. If only one mother stopped drinking, or one father put down the glass and stopped smiling and pretending that everything's all right, when inside every drinker there's a hurt child, and you had your hurt and I felt your pain and I wept tears. For the children in Northern Ireland, there are too many ignored that have parents who are too fond of the bottle through no fault of their own. And I know only too well, because I see those children and I see the hurt in their eyes. And it is very, very sad. And you are very refreshingly honest in what you talked about and what you did. And that whole lifestyle of band lifestyle, it's very enticing. The whole celebrity culture is very enticing, but there's a dark side to it. And you reflected that and the damage it does.
What do you think, Hugo?
I think Adrian's speaking very, very truthfully in there. And, you know, it is, when you get into the music business, it's one of those businesses that it's a lot of social life in it, and it leads to the drinking. You never think of what's happening until you're in too far. And, you know, if just somebody just thinks about it, I'm no saint, and I'm not trying to put out I am a sinner. I'm not, you know, I have probably the biggest sinner in the building, but that's beside the point. You know, if that just helped anybody at all, and it brought me and my daughter a lot closer together, that, you know, experience with you. And even though we didn't need to get any closer together, because we've always been very close, and I had a grandchild daughter with me last night, Kitty Sue, and she came, and you'd know Daddy, and she was trying to figure out all about this and all about that, you know. And it's just the way that it shows a new light of the whole thing. But, you know, I'm not putting myself on no pedestal, and I never would.
Good morning to you, Matt.
Good morning to you, Stephen.
Go ahead, Matt.
We've read the book, and we've seen the programme last night. It was very good. Hugo, became big Hugo last night, I think. It takes a big man to admit his mistakes.
Thank you very much. And they were mistakes, big ones.
well. We all make mistakes, Hugo. And it was good to see it last night.
Well, please God that if it works out for anybody at all and for myself as well, because it's a learning process.
Did you experience the lows when you sobered up? Like, were there big lows?
There was great lows. But you see, the funny thing about drink, no matter how low it was, inside an hour, you were able to get yourself out of it. If you had a few pounds about you, you went into the pub, you had a drink and you're back on again. You were as high as a kite again. Well, not high as a kite, but, you know, you get into this mood that you forgot about your troubles. The troubles weren't even the problem anymore, and they only arrived the next morning again. And I went for a lifetime considering giving up the drink. And I went off and on, off and on, and it just never worked.
Here's Pamela this morning, Hugo. Morning, Pamela.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Pamela.
Hello, good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Pamela. And Hugo's here too.
Well, actually, you're very far away, but I'll tell you, my daughter, just a lovely young woman, she died just about 5 weeks ago, about 18th of January, because of drink. She lost her children, four lovely children. Her husband took them because they could not live the way they were living, and she loved them, but this demon got a hold of her, and I'd taken her to different people to get help. She has a twin sister. She did the same. She did her best to help her, and I did, but it would have broken my heart and did break my heart when she phoned up or when I saw her and the state she was in, and nothing. I explained everything. I tried my very best to help her, as any mother would, and loved her very, very much. I miss her so much now.
What age was she? First of all, Pamela, first of all, I'm really, really sorry for the loss of your daughter. What age was she when she died?
She was 52.
My goodness. And so it must have been very, very sensitive for you watching Hugo's story last night.
Well, it was. She had been a very clever girl, and then did nursing, and could read the books, and all went in, and then this demon got hold of her, and it was just horrendous. It broke my heart every time I would see her and speak on the phone, because I knew then she had been drinking always when she phoned me. And
what would you like to say to Hugo this morning, Pamela?
I would just like to say to Hugo that it was lovely, lovely in a lovely way, but very nice to hear him last night on the television, and what he was saying was so true, and I'm so glad. Oh, I'm so glad, and thank God that he doesn't drink now, because the things he would have lost, and he will be in my prayers, and anybody else that drinks, and what they can lose, to lose your family, to lose everything, that bottle isn't worth it, because all it is the devil itself.
I think Hugo wants to speak to you, Pamela.
Pamela, thank you very much. I know what you're going through, and it's people like me who hurt families. You know, when you drink, you're hurting family, but you don't realise you're doing that, because you still love your family and you still love everybody around you. But you just go on, and this drink takes over, and the drink does all the thinking, and you don't think for yourself at all.
Yes,
and I know the hurt that you went through.
It really does break a lot of hearts.
Pamela,
when it's happening.
Let me say thank you very much, Pamela.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, and I'm sorry for your loss. Raymond in Strabane. Morning, Raymond.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead,
Hi,
Raymond.
Hi, Raymond.
Hi, Hugo.
Oh,
I'd just like to say, Hugo, I watched the programme last night, and I felt sympathy, I felt empathy, and I felt pride.
Thank you.
As you know yourself, you guys were in the same area as you, the hell of town.
Raymond Barr.
Oh, Raymond Barr, yes.
I was in the hell of town, the same as you. Hugo, it was an area of great poverty, but an area where some great friendships were forged. I remember you well, and I remember your mother particularly well. She was a single mother when it was very difficult to be a single mother. And I remember one occasion when I decided to become an altar boy, and I think it was Father McBigger told me where I might get the necessary garments, as my mother couldn't afford them herself at the time. And he sent me up to your house. Apparently you were retiring, and your mother greeted me at the door, and not a problem. She handed me over the garments, and although you were a bit more portly than me at the time, you luckily enough, my mother had a sewing machine and done a wee bit of dressmaking at home, and she was able to adjust them to fit me.
Raymond, when I used to do altar boy, the nuns in the convent used to reckon that I had the figure for the next bishop.
Well, I don't know about that, but
Raymond,
I only run a bar, as you know.
I know you do, surely, yes.
And I probably was maybe your favourite watering hole.
Mickey Christie was the first man that I went down to after, God rest him, he's passed away and gone. Mickey Christie was the first man I went down to and spoke about the drink and the problem. And Willie John Cairn was another man, Mr. Bann, and Bernard Dunning and people like that.
And would Hugo have come in drinking in your bar, Raymond?
No, he took it over later.
Oh, he took it over later. Yeah. Okay. Raymond, thank you.
He would have run at the
same time as someone, not when Raymond run the bar.
Raymond, thank you very much indeed.
Raymond, thank you.
Raymond was mentioning your mum there, and it's clear from that film last night, Hugo, from your life story last night, just how close you were to your mum and how special a place she still has in your heart.
Oh, she used to have size 2 shoes. And I used to sing in the choir up in the gallery in Strabane Chapel. You see, you used to know my mother was coming on because you hear the wee heels going. She had this wee distinctive walk, and she walked up, and she used to sit in the same place, and she went to chapel or church every evening, you know. And it was always, she played a big part, you know. And you know, but again, Stephen, the worst thing about it, I didn't know it was hurting the family until I had it done. Again, I never turned around and thanked my mother for what she'd done for me when she was alive. And it's only up until the last maybe 5 or 6 years that I sit back and realise what a one-parent mother was going through in 1950. You know, now it's no different. Now it's just the run of the mill. But and there's so much help there for young mothers too as well. But when my mother was bringing me up in 1950, there was nothing. And she was even scorned by people in probably her own street. And you never thought about this at the time. And she was always singing. Didn't give a sugar. She sang all the time. And around the house was singing. And, you know, she just loved life. And she used to read cups. And she used to, the house used to be full of people coming in there. And she was sitting down reading their cups and telling the girls. The girls were looking for her to see if they're going to get any boys for the weekend.
When you and I drove to your father's house, you wouldn't get out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
I think it was 2 reasons. Number one, Marion, my half-sister, lives up there.
Okay.
Didn't want to embarrass her either.
Fair enough.
I was thinking about her. As I said before, you know, I regretted the way I went up with drinking me.
This is when you went up to meet your dad.
And I met Marion for the first time then.
Yeah.
And
so to set this up for people, you'd never seen your dad before.
No. He used to be a cobbler in Strabane. And then he moved to Castledarg, and his wife Sarah met her then and became friends with Sarah, and he used to go up on a regular basis. But I went into Marion's house, which was next door to her father's house. Her father would have been next door and I'd have been in with Marion. And you know, as I said, I'm sorry the way I went up there, you know.
You were drunk.
I was drunk. When I think about it now, I should never have done it. But the only good thing that came out of it, I met Marion and I met her son Stephen and I met Carmel as well.
Can you walk through the door again for me? You're walking through the door
walking
drunk?
Through the door, and I walked in, and I wasn't falling over myself, you know, but it was one of these moments that I wanted to get an answer, so I had to go out and get the answer. And I walked in, and he was sitting at the fire, and the TV was over in this corner, and he was sitting in that corner and sitting at the fire, and his wife was standing over behind me, and I just says, all I want to know is, are you my father? Are you not? I said, I don't want anything. I'm not looking for anything. I just want to know. And he looked up at me, and he just nodded his head. And that was all. That's the only conversation we had. And the first time he came to the...
What is that? So he nods his head.
Yeah.
And you're looking at your dad for the first time.
When we went up initially, I had Jerry McCauley with me, and Jerry's a great friend of mine. God rest him, passed away now. And Jerry went over to the door and asked, and he came around the side of the house, and he walked over to the car, and he opened the car window and Jerry says, there's somebody here who wants to talk to you, Hugo Duncan, and he just turned and walked away again. So then we drove down the road and I drove down the road about 3 or 4 miles and I said to myself, I'm going back again. So we just turned around and went back up again.
Your dad had walked away?
Yeah. And I went back down again then and went back up again and knocked the door and I asked his wife Sarah, could I get in? I went in and he was sitting there and I just said, I'm not looking for anything. All I want to know is what I said before. And he just nodded his head and that was it. And that was the only conversation we ever had in our life. I went to his wake and I was chatting to his sister, or his daughter, Marion. And we were there and Sarah was there, his wife too as well. And I stood at the bottom of the coffin and had so many different thoughts going through my mind. And
what were they?
Oh, you know, what if, you know, what would it have been like to have a father? You know? And then I went to his funeral mass as well and to his burial and myself and my wife and up. And you've seen people looking over at us and Suzanne as well. And people were looking over at us and they knew that's his son, you know. But I'm glad that it all worked out that way at the end of it, you know.
Here's Pauline. Morning, Pauline.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, hello, Pauline.
Saw the programme last night and I really admire Hugo and all that he does. And, you know, when you look at life, we all have problems, big or small. But Hugo has come out a winner. He has battled a drink problem and a problem with his family, but he has come out a winner. And he's not a failure. You know, and when you listen to him on the radio on every day in the afternoon, you look at the outward appearance, you'd never have looked at the problem that he had come through. I never would have thought of Hugo of being a problem with drink. And I think in the afternoons, the encouragement that he gives to people that are housebound or out and about, he is to be admired for it.
Thank you very much.
Pauline, thank you.
I also want to say that life's too short and we only have one life and it's what you make of that life that lasts. And Hugo is definitely making a long last effect on people and you only can do your best and that is what he's doing.
Pauline, thank you.
I'll tell you, Stephen, he's doing more for the country than the politicians are because he puts a smile on people's faces.
Hugo for Pope.
Thanks. And keep your chin up, Hugo. Keep your chin up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pauline. Michael is in Derrystoke, Londonderry. Morning, Michael.
Stephen, how are you?
Doing okay, thank you.
Stephen, as a father of one daughter, I watched the show last night with interest and more readily from Sarban herself, and I thought a very poignant moment in the show, and the best moment in the show for me, actually, Stephen, was when Hugo's daughter said how proud she was of him, and Hugo genuinely looked very shocked.
And he actually
said to her, "Are ye?" And I thought, for a man of a stature, and a man who I had the utmost respect for, I thought it was a lovely moment that the man wasn't aware, and it shows you the real man that he is, that he wasn't aware of how proud his daughter was of him.
And, you know, I was really shocked when she said that, and it wasn't... It just came from the heart. She said, you know, we never talked about anything about the drink or about what I did or what I didn't do. And Suzanne would be, you know, she wouldn't be long letting you know if you did anything wrong, but we never talked about anything, you know. And I was shocked.
One of the... There's so many parts of that film. One of the other parts of the film is that you come in, you explain how when you come into the BBC, you weren't able to read or write.
Yeah.
Now, this organisation... is a fantastic organisation. It's an incredible organisation. But to come in here and, you know, to be a television and radio presenter and not be able to read, yeah. That's difficult because you've got to be able to read auto-cue and you've got to be able to read messages.
And anybody that worked with me in the television end of it, Town Challenge, or anybody worked with me in the early days of, you know, it was scripts getting in here. I couldn't do it. So how do you say? I just couldn't do it. And I was very lucky after getting in here for about a year and a half or so, I met Wee Joe, this works with me now. Mm-hmm. And Wee Joe's a former teacher. So I used to get all these pages in it before. Now, it wasn't that I couldn't read. I was a slow reader because I never had to read. I was out singing in the band. I was doing this, that, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. And education was the last thing that came to my mind. But I was getting all these words and I hadn't a clue how to pronounce them, never mind what they meant. And Wee Joe used to come in with a... And I got a friendship with Joe that I was able to ask her what the word meant and how to pronounce it. And she would have written them out phonetically for me. I would have learned to pronounce them then in the phonetic manner. And then I would turn around then and have to find out what they meant and where to put them. And if I ever asked Jo what did the word mean, she'd never say, are you stupid, you don't know what you're talking about. She would say, well, I think it means, she always made me feel comfortable. And she was sort of my university, you know, this open university. She was my university every day in here.
I hope you understand what you're doing here, though. Let me explain to you what you're doing. One of the things that I detest, it goes to my very core, I detest, is snobbery, or people thinking that they're better than someone else. And what you are doing here, Hugo, you're essentially saying you didn't know how to read certain words and you didn't understand certain
That's
words.
Right, yeah.
And there are many, many people in this country and in any society who feel that they're not as good as someone else because they don't have the intellect or the education as someone else. And do you know what you're doing today? You're giving them the confidence to admit that they don't understand a word, and they said openly, and they said confidently, and that's just lovely.
Yeah,
and I mean this, sir. I admire you for that, because there are so many people who aren't brave enough to say what you have just said in the last few seconds.
You see, I say this to young people who come into the tours there, that come into us about you know, academic qualifications means an awful lot, but you have to live the life as well. And Joe was very good to me, and it's friends get you through it. When I was up in his free gardens with the McGuire's and Stim Hughes and his family, and you know, all people like that, it helped me. They were good for me.
Why are you crying?
Because these are people I love, you know, they mean a lot to me, and they always help me out. And even Paddy Bradley, who was on last night, he called me Drunken Duncan. He was the boy. Like, Paddy used to give me money, when I needed, you know, anything at all. Paddy was there for me. And John Campbell was the same. You know, these are, I'm always maintained, friends are not, you know, close friends are not people you have to meet every day and put your arms around. Close friends are people that you might only meet once a year, but you know, if you need them, they're there for you. Yeah,
big time. Here's Maureen in Banbridge. Morning, Maureen.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Maureen.
I want to admire Hugo Duncan. I was in the same position. I had a son, was married, and had two young kids, and his marriage broke up on account of alcohol. And he was living on his own. He wasn't eating. He just drank and drank and drank in the house. And eventually, he was taken into the hospital, and he only lasted a week. His liver went, his kidneys went, his brain was actually affected. And he was on a life support machine for a week. And the doctors told us that all his organs was all, you know, breaking down. And they had to switch the machine off. So it's a curse to drink. And he will be a year dead in May coming. And he was only 39 years of age.
So many people suffering, you know, and you know, the person is drinking it. I say it again, and I know it's for a fact.
We tried to do everything to help him, myself and my daughter.
That's right.
Tried to get him into places and everything, but it didn't help. He just didn't want help.
No.
He just didn't want it. No matter what we done, he wouldn't accept it.
And whatever kind of demon the drink is, I'm not qualified on it, but when you try to give somebody that's taking drink advice, they go the complete opposite way. It's just it's like a young child coming up today.
Because
if you've got a young teenager going out and about and you try to stop them from doing this or that and the other thing, they'll go out and do it. And drink's the same if you try
because
to put people
when
off
he
it.
Died, we had to raid the house out, and we have found more empty bottles that he was hiding. You know, he was just a silent drinker. And I admire Hugo Duncan to coming out of that. It is a curse. Really, really. It's as bad as drugs.
Maureen, thank you. Olivia in Belfast. Morning, Olivia.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I haven't seen Hugo's the proggy last night, but I will do what caught my...
Some of you are asking, by the way, if the BBC is going to repeat the programme. I don't know.
No,
is on iPlayer, and for those of you who have missed it, you can see it on the BBC iPlayer. If you tap in Story of a Lifetime into the iPlayer, you can watch Hugo's film again.
Not a problem. No, what comes across from Hugo is that this man here, I've walked in Hugo's shoes. I've been in AA now for over 10 years. I have never had such a good life. And what gets this, the identification I get with Hugo is that he's so glad to get his family back, and he wants to put away what we call the big stick, beating himself up. You know what I mean? It's, I'm sure the daughter, you know, she loves to see him, sober and everything else. And that's all that families do want. They just want to. And another thing, Stephen, we're not bad people. We're sick people trying to get better.
Olivia, thank you for your call. I'm only doing so because we're running out of time. But that resonated with you. You're nodding your head there, what Olivia was saying.
Well, you'll find most of the people, Stephen, that if they've got a drink problem or a drug problem or whatever it is, they're all good people. They're all very good people. They've just gone wrong. And, you know, some people look at them, and if you've seen somebody out in the street, you might look at them and you just scorn and turn away. But, you know, these people are human beings, and we all need a second chance.